The Tom Woods Show, episode 1938.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, don't even think about missing the libertarian event of the year, the 2000th episode of The Tom Woods Show, live in Orlando, featuring many of your favorites from The Tom Woods Show. And Michael Malice says his special surprise guest, whose identity I myself don't even know, will bring the house down. Cost nothing to attend. Register at tomwoods2000.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here, talking to Scott Horton today about the withdrawal from Afghanistan announced by Joe Biden. We're going to get into what it means and is it real and all this stuff. And I just thought there's no better person to talk to than Scott Horton. As you know, he really is our libertarian foreign policy expert. We have some other names out there who are good, but that's Scott. He's just driven by a moral passion, in addition to having an encyclopedic mind. You'll know Scott from the Scott Horton Show. He's director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, host of the Scott Horton Show, two books on these topics, Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism, and then Fool's Errand about the Afghanistan War. So Scott, welcome to the show.
How are you doing, Tom?
I'm doing well. Well, I'm not feeling 100%, but in terms of this news item, I think I have reason to feel well, unless Scott Horton has a different interpretation. But I thought, given that you'd written a book called Fool's Errand about the war in Afghanistan, that you would be an appropriate guest to have on when Joe Biden announces a withdrawal from Afghanistan. I just read today that George W. Bush said that the consequences of this would be, quote, unbelievably bad. So that alone should be all you need to know. But let's talk about this. First of all, the common claim that we've heard at this point, we're going on 20 years in this thing. Mm-hmm. The common claim that we've heard is that without the U.S. presence, Afghanistan will turn into what? A terrorist training ground. We hear this, it's like a CIA term or something, because it gets repeated so often. Before we even get into anything else, can you just address that? I mean, maybe it will turn into, I don't know. I just want to know what your opinion is.
Well, so I wrote an article for the American Conservative about this called War Without a Rationale back a couple years ago, I guess after the book came out, which is kind of, you know, the one-stop shop for this. But it's basically, you know, my attempt to debunk, and I talk about this in the book too, it's my attempt to debunk the safe haven myth, which is, you know, that essentially there's some kind of magic portal from Afghanistan to Boston Logan Airport. And so if we don't keep American troops in Afghanistan forever, then at some point an Arab terrorist would stop by there and then from there would be able to get to the United States and, you know, hijack our airliners again. So the thing of it is, of course, is that terrorist attacks can be planned in an apartment. And, you know, the safe haven territory thing is really unnecessary, you know, for terrorist attacks against the United States. And of course, it's American occupation and intervention over there in the first place, which generates terrorism against us. And in fact, Lindsey Graham once said, well, we weren't in Afghanistan before September 11th. Yeah, no, I know, but we were back in the dictatorship in Egypt and had bases in Saudi Arabia, and it was Egyptians and Saudis hiding in Afghanistan who were behind the attack, man. Try and keep up, Senator Graham, who supports every bit of this. But anyway, so at this point now, I have to say, there are many claims by the military and by the American press that there are Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. And almost always, they refer to these United Nations reports. But then, if you read the United Nations reports, all they ever say is, well, we have information from member states. And then that's it. So they don't describe their sourcing or why we should believe it at all. And they mostly never define what they mean by Al-Qaeda. Do they mean Egyptian and Saudi friends of Osama bin Laden and Ayman al-Zawahiri who have, you know, some association with attacks against the United States? Or are they talking about Chechen Mujahideen who, you know, traveled to Afghanistan, so now we're going to try to cram them into our definition and say that these are anti-Western terrorists when that may or may not be the case at all? I think it's the latter. When they describe who they're talking about at all, they name Al-Qaeda in the Indian subcontinent, which, in other words, you know, something like Lashkar-e-Taiba, this, you know, group that fights in Kashmir, you know, in this conflict that has nothing to do with what's going on in Afghanistan, but they just give it a name and call it Al-Qaeda. But I mean, if I say to you, just apropos of nothing, hey, Tom, Al-Qaeda in the Indian subcontinent, doesn't that sound like somebody else's problem rather than yours? You know, like, what are we talking about here, dude? You know, there's nothing going on in India that has anything to do with attacks against the United States. And at that point, you can tell they're scraping the bottom of the barrel to define Al-Qaeda interests or actors in Afghanistan that could somehow threaten the United States. And, you know, they claim that, well, the Haqqanis are really close to Al-Qaeda and the Haqqanis are also really close to the Taliban. But they never really demonstrate that. Or at least when they make claims, they're defining Al-Qaeda so broadly or so kind of, they're not really defining it at all. And so they're just kind of leaving it open to what they even mean by that. And then if there's a real international terrorist group there at all, I mean, I don't want to give them too much credit for that. But there is a group that declared their loyalty to ISIS there back in the middle part of the last decade. But they were essentially just also local Pashtun Mujahideen, but from the other side of the line in Pakistan. They were the Pakistani Taliban, and they had come as refugees from Obama and the Pakistani government's war in the Swat Valley and the tribal territories in the early part of the last decade, and found safe haven on the Afghanistan side of the line, where then the CIA and the Afghan government tried to use them against the Pakistanis and against the Afghan Taliban, and they ended up hoisting the black flag and declaring their loyalty to ISIS, which is, you know, the former caliphate in Iraq and Syria. But the thing of it is, they're really just local militiamen. And the other thing of it is that the Taliban hate them and see them as severe competition and so effectively fight them. And if you go back to right about 6 months ago, or a little more than that now, last fall, in the Washington Post and the New York Times, they said that JSOC, that is Top Tier Special Operations Forces, I forget if it was like 75th Rangers or Delta or what, but they were flying drones as air cover for the Taliban in an alliance against ISIS. And they had a little plaque, it said in the Washington Post, if you can believe that, they had a plaque at their headquarters that said Taliban Air Force. And so in other words, the Americans, at least at that time, are considering the Taliban as their allies against, you know, international terrorist groups inside Afghanistan, rather than, you know, allies of them. And frankly, it just doesn't make sense. And look, the Taliban can make bad decisions. I'm not saying that, but it doesn't make any strategic sense whatsoever for them, right when they're in the catbird seat and have everything going their way, to have an alliance with terrorists who are going to strike at nation states outside of their borders and bring carpet bombing back to their country after they've won. And, you know, I just read a thing today at the conservative headquarters, which is Richard Viguerie's group, I guess, about how everybody knows that the Taliban are bent on world conquest for Sharia law. And that's just stupid and wrong. It's just not. You know, it's like saying the Republican Party of, you know, Williamson County, Texas is bent on world conquest. It's just, I mean, you can claim that. In fact, there's probably a better argument there. But the Taliban have always been for revolution in one country. And that was always the split between them and Osama bin Laden. That's what Mullah Omar hated about bin Laden, was that he was going to get his new fledgling regime, which America under Bill Clinton had helped to support the rise of the Taliban government in the first place. And that they were going to risk everything by attacking the U.S. and getting them in trouble, which is exactly what happened. And 20 years of all of this mayhem over there and all of these deaths, and for them to deliberately do that to themselves again, by tolerating, you know, a bunch of bin Ladenites there, I highly doubt that that's going to happen. And then if it does, Afghanistan is exile anyway. You know, this is a big problem with our war there, is it's landlocked in South Central Asia, and it provides no ready access to anywhere else in the world, much less the middle part of North America. So, yeah, I just think on that issue, as far as the safe haven in Afghanistan, it just makes no sense. And look at the September 11th attack. Bin Laden was in Afghanistan, but the attack was planned in Madrid, Spain, and Hamburg, Germany, and, you know, in Florida and New Jersey and California and Maryland, right? So What difference does a safe haven in Afghanistan make if you're angering Egyptian engineering students studying in Germany? And they're the ones who have the student visa and the flight simulator experience. You know what I mean? Afghanistan, you know, hardly comes into play there, other than this is where the leaders of the group behind it were hiding out.
Let's talk about what was the point of this whole war, which I presume was to marginalize the Taliban, make sure that there's a stable government that's friendly to the West in its place. And if they could establish that, I don't see why they would stay. So how is Biden spinning this? Is he saying, we did establish that and now we can leave? He's certainly not going to say, well, the whole thing was hopeless. We shouldn't have bothered.
Right. Yeah, he did try to sort of have it both ways and say, look, we succeeded in creating a government that ought to be able to stand and defend itself by now. Okay. You know, the way that they phrased it in the press conference, it's amazing watching the press corps, you know, who, especially after Trump, just worship Biden. But in this case, they are just incredulous that he could end this war. So every question is a challenge. Yeah, but if something bad happens, you're going to go back, right? And everything, you know, the way that they frame it all.
Yeah.
And one of them says, well, is this mission accomplished? Like Bush on the aircraft carrier, you know? And he goes, no, I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying, look, they do have a 300,000-man army. They ought to be able to do some work with that, right? Like, what can I say? At some point, it has to stop being our responsibility to continue to prop that up. Yeah. So in other words, yeah, he's calling it a very small lowercase v victory here, that they did essentially create a state. And then, so yeah, now this is the test. And what he was essentially saying was, he's willing to see if they can hold it together on their own, and he's not coming to rescue them. And that's it. And you know, the thing of it is, and we got to talk about this part, which maybe was going to be your next question anyway, was about, well, are we really leaving, or what's the deal with the CIA and et cetera, like that.
Yeah.
So General Miller is gone and he's not replaced by a new one. I forget if he was the 18th or 19th general in charge of this war. But 17th or 18th, but he's gone and not replaced. So all of his command authority has been devolved back to the head of Central Command, you know, based in Qatar or in Tampa, Florida, and, you know, the Middle Eastern Command. And they're claiming, well, we can still do airstrikes there, but they always leave open the question, to what end? For quote unquote anti-terrorist missions. In other words, they found some members of Al-Qaeda in the Indian subcontinent running around, or to bomb the Taliban in support of what's left of the national government they've, you know, attempted to create here in Kabul. And I think, you know, cynical people are saying, oh yeah, see, they're going to leave the CIA and they're going to leave, you know, some special operations, and they're going to leave this air power and the war continues. But that's kind of defining the war too broadly. I think that the war to support the national government there is over, and that they have decided that, yeah, if we sit here and watch Kabul fall like Saigon, that's tough. And what are they going to do about it? You know, and you know, the thing of it is, it's funny, people don't talk about this aspect of it, right? People are, you know, they're so cynical about, rightfully so, but about all the political decisions around this. Why is this happening now? Why is Biden doing the same thing that Trump wanted to do, you know, a little later?
It's like you're reading off my notes here, Scott.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, so when you say these questions, right? Because that is what I wanted to know.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, the answer is because they lost the war. The Taliban won it.
Yeah, see, my thought was inertia would have been easy, because that's everybody, it seems like, from Obama on, being in Afghanistan was just, well, you know, there we are, and it's just not going to change, and I don't want to be the one who changes it, because then I'll be accused of losing the war on terror or something like that. So it would have been easy, especially since there's no large constituency demanding an end to the U.S. intervention there. But really, that is not on the political radar of anybody, and yet he did it. I mean, that is something.
Yeah, and it's, look, it was because the Taliban won. That's the answer. And look, the polls say 73% of the American people are against this war. And the last poll I saw from, what, a year ago, was that veterans of the Afghan war, I guess they lump them together, veterans of the Iraq and Afghan war, say they want out of Afghanistan by high 60%, you know, super majorities.
Okay.
That's your constituency there, but it's also...
Yeah,
the,
that's true.
But it means that if you wanted to stay to save the Kabul government, you need 50,000 guys. You need to send a huge surge of Marines back to Helmand and back to Kandahar. And you're going to have to double down all your special operations guys at Bagram and all your air power. And then to what end? We've been doing this for 20 years. And at some point, even these idiots can say to themselves, they're like, well, look, in another 10 years, we're going to be in the same situation. And in another 20 years, we're going to be in the same situation. And while Trump, you know, ending with Obama, because Obama escalated the air war on his way out and did send more soldiers and, you know, said he was going to quit, but he held it at about 10,000. And then the generals essentially, you know, blackmailed Trump into escalating the war in August of 2017, where he sent another, I forget if it was 5 or 10,000 now, but also massively escalated the air war. And then, but it didn't work. It didn't accomplish anything. And so, you know, the Taliban continued to just gain and gain and make deals. And in fact, their new leadership got smart. Instead of just burning down every police station or whatever, they just took them all over. You built new schools, fine. They're run by the principals now, a guy from the Taliban. And they just took over everything that the Americans had tried to build there. You know, by the time my book came out in 2017, I wrote in there, you know, the Taliban controls more than half the country at night. You know, that was all the estimates. In the daytime, you know, they won't sack the provincial capitals because that'll get them carpet bombed with B-52s, right? So, but instead they just take district after district after district. They've been completely dominant in the south and the east of the country for years. And so Donald Trump was, you know, he had to face the reality that air power can't do it. If you're going to fight these guys, you're going to have to send in massive infantry force. And then they're still really hard to find.
Yeah.
You know, they're insurgents. So what are you going to do? You're going to either carpet bomb the place with H-bombs and call that peace, or you have to quit. That's it. You have to quit. You lost. Because again, and I said this to you before, but not on this show, but America was trying to prop up essentially a coalition of 10 and 20% minority groups against the 40% plurality of the country in the Pashtun tribes. And it just wasn't ever going to work. And, you know, they were essentially, they refused to go along with that. They had originally surrendered and Bush refused to accept their surrender. And then, so by 2005, it was on. And, you know, and I'm sorry, because I guess I never really answered your real question. What was the point of this? Well, it was regime change in Kabul. They let Osama escape. They overthrew the government in Kabul. And then immediately they threw down the gauntlet and said, yeah, we're going to we're going to create this new society for you people. You're going to be a Westphalian nation state central with a central federal government in Kabul. You're going to have democratic elections and all your customs are canceled. And we're going to do it like we do it now. And, you know, I think I say in the book, when Laura Bush gave the radio address and said, our writ is now to protect the rights of all Afghan women, that it sounds silly on the face of it. And it is. But what it also is throwing down the gauntlet, right? And saying that we have an endless writ to rule this nation forever, as W. Bush said today, as you quote, or else something bad might happen. So we have to stay to make everything our way, but we can't. And the idea that the U.S. Army is strong and therefore they can create new realities wherever they go and make things look however they want is just, that fantasy has been completely shipwrecked by the war in Afghanistan and Iraq and the rest of this. The entire Middle East, hell, from Nigeria to the Philippines is a disaster area right now because of W. Bush and Barack Obama, and for that matter, Donald Trump and everything that they've wrought in spreading this stuff. And they failed. So that's why they're leaving. Biden was in the position when Biden came in, I don't know exactly what they told him, but it must have been, well, you can send 50,000 guys and start the war again because we've had this ceasefire the whole time since Trump started negotiating. You know, if we break the deal and tell the Taliban, well, screw you, we're staying, we're going to need force protection. We're going to need to do another surge in order to hold them off. And even then, that was just counterproductive back when they did the first surge. It just made them more powerful anyway. So that was it. You know, their back is against the wall. And so that was it. They have to go.
Well, I'm curious, maybe you don't know this off the top of your head, but are Biden or Harris on record as having commented under Trump, when it looked like Trump wanted to withdraw, did they say that that would be irresponsible? I'm just curious.
I'm not sure. You know what? I got to tell you about Biden. I don't know about what Harris ever said, but
no one does.
Yeah. Nobody cares. And I don't think she ever takes a position on anything important, you know.
Yeah.
But Biden has been over the war against the Taliban for a decade. I mean, in 2009, you know, he was much older than Obama, right? 30 years older than Obama or something like that, 25 or something. So he saw it as his job to protect his new young charge, you know, as vice president and give him this advice. And the advice was, you don't have to bend over for these generals. Tell them to screw off, man. You don't have to do what they want. Let's do a minimal surge where we only go after terrorists. In other words, not the Taliban, but bad guys from somewhere else, I guess. However you want to try to define that. And we'll do a counter-terrorism mission only. We're not going to do counter-insurgency and try to win over the hearts and minds of all of Pashtunistan. It just ain't going to happen. And so that was his position all along. And which I guess implied in there, we would kind of make our peace with the Taliban and not really care if they take over the country. Just, you know, help us keep Al-Qaeda down, or, you know, don't back them or support them and help us to kill them. And we won't have a problem with you, kind of thing, was the idea there. And so, you know, I think he thought of that before Trump. I think Trump was agreeing with him, or Trump actually was better than him back then when he was out of power, you know, before he was president, saying we should just absolutely get out now. And I think that Biden really did think that he had got Obama to agree that we will be done by the end of 2014. People like to share that clip on Twitter of Biden saying, I swear we'll be definitely out by 2014 and all this. I think that is what he really wanted. But the generals just won it. Like, oh, we can't leave now. We'll lose everything. And so kick the can down the road and kick it down the road and make it somebody else's problem, which they did. I think Obama really wanted out too. And then he just ended up going, okay, whatever. Nobody cares anyway. So I'll just leave 8,000 guys and make it Trump's problem. And then anyway, so I think Biden is not into propping up the Kabul government. I think he's always thought that was a waste to try to do that.
All right. Well, that's interesting to me. But I guess I also want to know, why is it that when Trump tried to do the same thing, everybody united about how irresponsible this was? And then yeah. Trump backed down.
In fact, I didn't really answer your question, because Biden was included in that sort of. Like, he didn't denounce that. But what he did say was, like, Trump essentially wanted to just leave. And Biden was saying, well, I think we should keep a base maybe in Pakistan or something like that so we can still do counterterrorism, you know. And so where Trump was just over, didn't want to continue doing that. So I don't know if Biden denounced him as irresponsible on it or whatever, but I think he agreed about stopping fighting the Taliban, but he clearly has wanted to stay. And I think the Pakistanis already told him to go to hell. I don't know where he thinks. I mean, he can still attack with planes from Qatar and from the Indian Ocean, assuming they have intelligence on the ground of who they think they want to bomb. But, and you know, well, this goes a direction if you want to go about, I'm sure you saw in the news where the Taliban was reassuring the Chinese that we're not going to back the Uyghurs against you. We don't want any trouble with China, right? So China, of course, is very close to Pakistan, who are the Taliban's patrons. And yet in the past, say going back to the late 1990s and 2000s, the CIA backed training camps in Afghanistan of Uyghurs that they used against China, or were at least for use against China. And Eric Margolies saw them there in the summer of 2001. Obviously, a program begun under Bill Clinton, but continued under W. Bush, where they were back in bin Laden training camps, Al-Qaeda training camps in Afghanistan for the Uyghurs. And then, of course, some of those very Uyghurs were then rounded up when America switched sides after September 11th and ended up tortured in Guantanamo Bay, and then were only later released. And then we also know from the reporting of Seymour Hersh and a few others about a significant presence of Uyghur fighters, that is Western Chinese Muslims there from the Xinjiang province, fighting in Syria in the CIA dirty war that was, remember, for Al-Qaeda against the Baathist and Shiite interests and Iranian interests in Syria. And so now there's a problem. Apparently, there were like at least 20,000 or something Uyghur fighters who had gone to fight in Syria. And now they're coming home and by way of Afghanistan. So there's a potential for, you know, America to ally with the Taliban and go right back to where they were in the summer before September 11th, backing these Uyghurs and maybe cooperating with the Taliban to back these Uyghurs against China. Which I could see the Americans wanting to do that. I think the Taliban would be crazy to go along with that at this point. But I could see the Biden people thinking that they're clever and that, you know, we could maybe go back to something like that.
Hey, folks, just a quick message from our sponsor, Blinkist. Let's face it. Let's be honest with each other. You and I are nerds, right? We love to read books. And the more books we hear about, the more books we add to our list. and it becomes overwhelming and we wonder how we're ever going to get to all of them. Well, the solution is an amazing app called Blinkist. The way it works is very simple. They take thousands of nonfiction bestsellers and they take the key ideas and insights and condense them down into 15-minute text and audio explainers that help you understand more about the core ideas. So you can dive into a topic quickly. You can find out if you really want to read the entire book. 15 million people are already using Blinkist to broaden their knowledge in 27 nonfiction categories. I like Blinkist because in just a matter of 15 minutes, I can get a really solid grounding in something I'm curious about. I've used it when driving around, when taking a walk, and I particularly enjoyed recently Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. But you can also find libertarian classics on Blinkist like Capitalism and Freedom by Milton Friedman, or For a New Liberty by Murray Rothbard. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/woods to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/woods to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/woods. When we think back to the Vietnam War, there's that lovely phrase, decent interval.
Uh-huh.
You know, that we can't have the client state collapse within moments of the U.S. withdrawal, right? We want there to be a decent interval between the withdrawal and the collapse.
Right.
So what are we looking at in Afghanistan then?
You know, they should have left on May 1st, like in the deal. I guess they just didn't want, I don't know about credit, but they just didn't want it to be Trump's call. So they at least, you know, postponed it. But they should have taken that because that's the start of what they call the fighting season over there when it's warm enough for everybody to go and fight. And so the Taliban have been making huge gains all across the country. I mean, it's an absolute debacle. It's like when ISIS took over Western Iraq and just looted all the military bases and got all those trucks and all those rifles, all that equipment and, you know, artillery and whatever. And they're just sacking military bases all over the country. They're just walking right in. We'll accept your surrender now. And taken over. In some cases, they're, you know, taking the commander out back and shooting him in the head. In other cases, I know I've seen footage of them saying that, hey, we're all brothers and fellow Muslims here and whatever. You guys just give us your rifles and go home. No problem. Not even taking them prisoner and just telling them, go home and you're fired. You're no longer in the army. And so bye. And then they're just taken over. And there have been some real battles. There was footage came out yesterday of them. You know, they had won a battle. This is from a few weeks ago. They had won a battle against the special forces, the Afghan special forces. And then they came out and surrendered. And then the Taliban just, you know, massacred them while they were standing there. Or I don't know, the footage isn't all that clear. I don't know, maybe somebody pulled a gun or something. But in any case, they're suffering just absolute humiliations. They sacked the city of Kunduz and then they pulled back out again, but they're right on the border. They completely rule Kandahar province other than Kandahar City, including the border crossings into Pakistan. And then remember when the Civil War started back in, or when America intervened back in 2001, it was the Northern Alliance in the far northwest of the country that was like the 10% of the land that wasn't controlled by the Taliban yet in the Civil War that they were still fighting. Well, now the Taliban are heading them off at the pass. And they're taking control of all of these northern districts before that eventuality has the chance to crop up. And there are Pashtun regions up in the north from previous, you know, state-sponsored migrations and whatever back in the 20s. And so they have a core constituency there near Kunduz. And it's enough, at least, to build up their power all around the north and really surround the alliance that controls the capital city. So then, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, Tom. If they're going to walk right into Kabul and just declare that this is ours now, you know, their buddy, Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, CIA's former guy from the 80s, who was one of our bitterest enemies, and his group, Hizbi Islami, was one of our bitterest enemies in this war. But he came in from the cold in 2016 and made a deal with the government there. But he's essentially a Pashtun allied with the Haqqani, you know, a warlord allied with the Haqqanis and the Taliban. And so he could be like a Trojan horse, sitting there with 20 or 30,000 militiamen at his command right there in the heart of the capital city. And he's known as the butcher of Kabul from his, you know, from his role in the civil war in the 1990s. And killed tens of thousands of civilians trying to take the capital while Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton were still supporting him. And so anyway, I don't know what's going to happen, but I think it's going to be bad. The Taliban are not settling for less than victory over the whole country here. A united, centralized power under them, a new state. In fact, all your like smart libertarian theorist types listening to this show ought to be writing about this, the creation of a brand new state or the reinstitution of a shadow government as the real official government of a country right before our eyes at the, you know, failure of an imperial mission to prop up a minority dictatorship over them or something like that. I'll tell you one thing. It's in my Twitter feed if people want to look at it. There's footage of a Taliban leader sitting down, essentially reading the riot act to a group of Hazaras who are Shiites and have been part of the alliance against them this whole time. And he's just reading them the riot act, man. Welcome to the new world order, boys. We're in charge now. And it's funny, at the beginning, he says, listen, we've always been very nice to you. And they all go, oh, and groan and shift uncomfortably in their seats, but they're just beaten. And he's like, listen, so what we're going to do is we're not going to, and I'm not vouching for his promises, but I'm just saying this was his rhetoric, was we're not going to take revenge against you. We're not mad at you. We're all Muslims. We don't care that you guys are Shiites. That's cool with us. We're not, you know, bin Laden. We're just the Taliban. It's all right. And everything's going to be good. But don't bother trying to resist us, because after all, if you couldn't resist us with the U.S. military and all their power, then how are you going to resist us as just a militia? You might as well surrender now, because this is the way things are. And they seem to accept it, at least in the moment. They were sitting there with nothing to say other than, yep, we've been beaten. And the Taliban are mocking their defeat of another empire, you know, in their proud history. And so, yeah, I don't know, man. The game is up. The Taliban, they're bastards, Tom. But at the same time, I think everybody in that country is so tired of fighting, right? Like, that's the silver lining on all of this. Is everyone is so exhausted that maybe they could just shake hands and forget about it, you know? And I have no way of really measuring this, but I'd be very surprised if the militias that are left as the Afghan government falls apart and that power devolves to those different tribal chiefs and whatever, I'd be pretty surprised if they really have the power to resist the Taliban. And maybe just surrendering would be in their best interest at that point if there's nothing that they can really do about it. And I don't know what the CIA or JSOC or a few drone strikes or anything else are supposed to do about that reality either. So, you know, they're leaving a few hundred troops at the embassy and they're having the Turks send troops to the airport. But I think that's just waiting for the roof of Saigon moment. Even in, you know, Biden in his talk, Tom, he goes, the mission hasn't failed yet. And then later in the speech, he says, look, this is not a roof of Saigon moment. This is not the fall of Saigon. I was like, yeah, no, it's not. That's in a few weeks or a few months from now.
Yeah.
But that is exactly where we're headed right now, is just it didn't work. Sorry.
Well, I have no doubt that there will be people out there listening to this who would like to know the history of their own country, and particularly the extremely long war and what really happened with it, what the true story behind it is. And you can find that in Scott's book, Fool's Errand. So I'll link to that at tomwoods.com/1938. You should also check out the Scott Horton Show, where you can get analysis like this all the time. All right, Scott. Well, listen, thank you for coming on. This is exactly what I wanted to know about. And so you're going to say, yeah, this is not one of these phony baloney, yeah, we're getting out, but there are 28 provisos and we're not really getting out. It really is getting out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the CIA thinks they're going to do there. They're going to back these militias for a little while, or maybe they're going to make a deal with the Taliban that, look, you know, we have some enemies in common. Let's try to work together on that or some kind of, I really don't know what their plan is. I mean, they're not quitting entirely, but the war to back up the Kabul government is over, at least for now. I mean, it could change. In fact, you know what? Let me say one more terrible thing. I know a guy in the army, an officer, who he said that they were drilling and preparing to go back to Bagram to send in paratroopers. And he didn't know whether they were going to really do it or not, but that they were getting ready to do that. And possibly as a message to the Taliban that, you know, I don't know, we're willing to make the same mistakes all over again or what. I don't, my gut tells me that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, they left the Bagram air base. I would have never believed it, but they left. And of course they snuck out of there in the middle of the night. And I mean, man, you can't really take that back, I don't think. I don't think that's over. So that's where we're at. And yeah, it's going to be ugly. There's the resistance against the Taliban taking over the whole country is going to be bitter, I think, you know, and And I think the Taliban will be ruthless in crushing it. You know, that's the most likely result of where we're headed here. It's just the problem is there's nothing we can do about that.
Well, I don't want to neglect mentioning also your book, Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism, which is your more recent book. So I'll link to that also at tomwoods.com/1938. If you want the real information about all this stuff, you go to Scott Horton. Scott, thanks for your time.
Thank you, sir.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for today. I would urge you to support Scott. I support Scott every month. Even though we're friends, you might think that would be awkward. But yeah, sending money to somebody on a monthly basis isn't so awkward when it's automated. So I do it. If I get benefit from somebody, I want to support that person and reward that person and say thank you to that person. So that's what I do in the case of Scott. So if you go to scotthorton.org, you'll see how you can support Scott, just as I do. And you'll be doing something very important for the world if you do so. So do please check that out, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.